Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We have some remarkable programming here at WBAI. Vicki Hefnagel and other people who address these issues, some of the physical issues, like Majida Lee, and they talk about things that happen to people and how people respond. Now, I want to talk today about menopause. Why do I want to talk about menopause? Am I that kind of a physician? Do I have an issue about whether or not bioidenticals are better than non-bioidenticals? And what's my issue? I don't know enough about that. But I do know that menopause is something that no one really understands. And it's a funny thing, the word menopause, because the people who don't understand it the most are the men. It's almost like pause men, menopause. It's like, where do the men go during this thing? Well, I finally found someone, Dr. Henry Hess, who's on air with us now. Henry, welcome with us.
Thank you, Armand.
Yeah, glad to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. We're two men who have, think, with a very close, similar approach, I see. There's a mind-body approach to the book and a mind-body approach to just the way he sees this whole time of life. And I think it's a very, very important discussion, because all of the discussions are, how do you deal with it? What do you do with it? How do you deal with it? What do you do with it? I want to start off with a basic question, Henry, if you don't mind. What is menopause? What is it?
Well, I think it's good that we define it. Menopause actually means the end of menses, the end of reproductive life. And it is really the end of ovulation, or the reproductive phase of a woman's life. And during that time, the woman stops essentially from producing most of her estrogen. The average age of menopause is 51.4, although it really spans a considerable number of years. That's just the average.
Now, if that's the average age 100 years ago, what was the life expectancy?
Well, exactly. Menopause is fairly new to us. 100 years ago, most women didn't live beyond to reach menopause, not to mention beyond it. So, it's although some of our therapies for menopause are known from those few women, the ancients, that live longer, menopause is new.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
But
no, that's okay.
Life expectancy 100 years ago was about 47 years old.
Yes, it was.
So people didn't go through it. I mean, many women would begin it, but almost like it augured death. Yesterday I did a program about Freud's concept of the Eros-Thanatos conflict between the two of us. And he said, just as there is a life wish, there's a death wish. Maybe 100 years ago, menopause meant time to die, you know? And then we changed it. We said, oh, it doesn't have to be that way. And life expectancy got longer. And now we have this thing that augured kind of a death of what? Birth, death of eggs, death of reproduction. And yet you're going to live beyond that. And something has to happen, because you weren't supposed to live beyond that.
Well, that's a very interesting concept, because you're absolutely right. Men continue to be able to reproduce beyond that age, but
that's
not
right.
Women. Yes.
So now that we've fooled Mother Nature and stretched the life expectancy, we now look at this and say, okay, so how do we deal with it? Why do we deal with it? But, of course, there's all the physical ways of dealing with it. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about the history, which you began saying, of what people used to do going back thousands of years.
Well, the people found ways to continue their youthful feeling. Many, many years ago, the ancients, in fact, at tribal parties and ceremonies, the elderly drank the urine of the young. And if you look at it, really, the virile portion of the urine was hormones. And then in the 1800s, what happened was that men and women, but mostly women, who actually became older, would ingest the ground up parts of animal gonads, which were, of course, hormone therapies. And it wasn't until the late 1920s that a German chemist actually isolated estrogen and found that it was useful for women experiencing menopause problems. So it was then, from then on, that the wider spread use of hormones became available. So that's kind of a little bit of the history of it. In the early 1940s, the scientists recognized that they couldn't get enough women to donate urine for the hormones, so they started to get it from animals. And pregnant animals had higher doses of hormones, so ultimately they extracted the urine of pregnant mares, and that's where Premarin came from, the now famous estrogen therapy, Premarin.
Doesn't the word Premarin itself refer to mares?
It does. Premarin, pregnant mare urine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that became popular during that period of time. And a lot of science improved on that in the 50s, and then in 1960 was a real era of hormones when scientists were looking to produce a birth control pill, which came out around 1960. But in that era, they learned to synthesize hormones from plant intermediates, and not just birth control pills, but actual hormones. And that's where the bioidentical hormone era began, in the 60s, actually. So nowadays, women on and off, depending on the media scare, take hormone therapies because a lot of women live now to menopause and beyond. So that's a little bit of the history of it.
All right. Well, now let's talk about where we stand and what happens. And the eventual question I want to get to, and you and I shared this, it seems that one friend of mine wrote a book. She wrote a book, Why Men Leave. And she finds that a lot of men leave their relationships somewhere in the 50s and 60s. And why do they leave their relationships? And they keep saying the same thing, because I found I eventually could not please my wife. Now, I think many of those men had no awareness of menopause. What they felt is they had been with their wives for a number of years, and then they had grown apart. And suddenly she didn't seem turned on sexually anymore, and suddenly she didn't feel as close to him. She wasn't bonding with him the way she used to, and she seemed a little more irritable with him, and a little more irritable, and he eventually said, What am I doing here? And he tried to talk to her about it, and she would say, well, only if you buy me a house, I'll be happy. If we have grandchildren, I'll be happy. If we get a new car, I'll be happy. And according to this book, she said, it just men kept saying, I can't make her happy. So now, in this time, when a woman goes through this, a man is faced with a real challenge if he has no awareness of it at all. And, you know, doctors don't talk about it. Psychiatrists don't talk about it. Psychologists don't address it. Give me some opinion.
Well, you're so dead on. I mean, as you know, although I'm a chemist, my PhD is in chemistry, I'm a gynecologist and been a practicing gynecologist for almost 30 years. And, Armand, just what you said is what I see day after day. Just as you described it, completely. You're right. We don't address it. I mean, I'd like to think in our practice we do, but it's something that just isn't recognized in the busyness of medical school and residencies.
How many support groups do you think there are for men of menopausal wives? A support group.
I don't know of one.
I don't see it. Yet, how many support groups are there for women in menopause? There are many. There are many in
different forms. Well, there are. Yeah, you're right. Not as many as there should be, but there just aren't.
A friend of mine, Cherry Quincy, on the West Coast, she found a thing that they did, which I thought you might find interesting. She found when women were going through menopause, she would put them in sweat lodges like the old American Indian sweat lodges, like the Native American sweat lodges. And she said most of their symptoms would abate when they were together in a room sweating. How's that for a chemical phenomenon?
Well, that there must be some
Stuff going on in that.
Explanation for it.
That's right. Yeah. It must be a biochemical explanation. So there are those things. So now if we talk to it, as a man, when you're looking at someone you love, and suddenly she says, it's too hot in here, we have to open all the windows in the middle of the winter, is he now saying, I should be alerted, I should be aware? Or does he fight with her and say, it's freezing in here, look at the temperature? What do you think is the consciousness that has to be introduced to this?
I think most men don't understand it.
They have no idea. You're right.
They don't understand it, and I think it's a complex issue that they don't.
So what would you say to them, Henry? What would you talk, if you were talking to them, and we're going to talk to the seven steps to the best time of your life written for women, what would you say to those men? If you had a man...
There is a little part in my book about men, but I didn't address it as we're addressing it here, and it doesn't need to be addressed.
What do you say to them? These are your brothers.
I think that there has to be, there obviously is a biochemical reaction going on in the woman that's not going on in the man. And for somehow, those biochemical reactions were okay for the first 25 years of their marriage, where they went through issues and situations that were also considerably different biochemically. For example, when the woman tried to and then became pregnant and had a baby and stuff. But somehow, as the end of reproductive life comes, there's a major chemical change. And that chemical change really starts to make a woman a little bit like a man. And not only chemically, but physically. Women change dramatically at that time, whereas a man, his changes in aging are much more slow.
But men's changing, it's interesting that men's changing in aging is to move more towards the feminine.
They do a little bit.
Don't they?
The men produce more, you're exactly right about that. You know your chemistry. The man starts to produce a little more estrogen than he did when he was younger.
Right. His testosterone drops.
Testosterone drops, but still remains dominant. And then the woman, though, her testosterone slowly goes down, but not very fast either, but her estrogen drops dramatically. So ultimately, she becomes more testosterone dominant. That changes her body configuration, and I think some of it has to do with our development, that as a man, in their attractiveness, physically I'm talking about, are attracted to women in terms of reproduction, and when she starts to go through the change, she starts to physically change, obviously over a time. So there's that chemistry that goes on in a woman and a man's body.
And at the same time, now this interesting thing, what you're saying, I've seen this happen so many times in couples' relationships, they reverse roles. It's almost like the woman becomes the man and the man becomes the woman, if it's in that kind of a thing started. And this reversal of role happens so often because what the man is trying to do is, out of his love, he's trying to please his distressed mate. She's distressed. She's distressed about the house. She's distressed about things. She feels a general dissatisfaction in her life because of the way her chemistry is working at the moment, making her feel like she's on edge at every moment. And so he turns to her and says, let me see how I could soothe you. At this role, he goes from being a man to being a little boy trying to please mommy. And that must trigger in the woman further aggressive responses. I lost my man, too. And I think psychodynamically, it really is potential disaster unless there's some consciousness, some awareness brought to it that people could see. So again, I ask you, you know, if you and I were sitting with people, if we had one of my men's groups and we were talking to the men and you said to them, here's what you could expect and here's what you do. When she wants the windows wide open, what do you do? How do you handle it? What's the best way?
According to what you say, there are a couple of ways to handle it. Counsel to the couple would be that he would open the woman and understand, you know, the physiological processes and help her with the discomfort. And but as you're unrolling the situation, there are some role reversals, as you're saying.
Except I can give you another example of it, a man who had this situation where the window was, had to be open on one side of the bed. He bought himself a little heater for his side of the bed. And he said, okay, you could open the window on your side. On my side, I'll put a heater. And he said, I fully understand what you need, and here's what I need. And there was a balance. It wasn't you're wrong for wanting the window open, because he understood.
I think that's the best way. My own self, I think some of that will go back to the earlier relationships that the couple had, and it'll be dealt with depending on their earlier relationships. Some of them really can work together and through this time, and others don't want to work through it at all.
And some don't want to work with it. He says, "Oh, look, I married a woman who was a certain way, and now that you've changed, I don't want to be with you anymore."
Exactly.
Or she'll say, I married a man I needed, but now I don't feel like I need a man anymore. I feel I have more of my own strength, and I'm not attached. What happens to oxytocin? Talk to me as the chemist. Oxytocin, the bonding chemical.
Yes, well, that's fascinating. It's fascinating from my perspective as a chemist and fascinating from my perspective as an obstetrician gynecologist. I don't anymore do obstetrics because I'm so involved in the hormones and menopause, but I did for years. And, it's been the thesis, of mine and many others that oxytocin is one of the reasons that women love their doctors so much, especially if they're in labor. And oxytocin is a feel good,
That's beautiful. Women who are in labor secrete a lot of oxytocin for the baby to be bonding with their baby.
It causes the contractions of the uterus, so it's high when a woman is in labor.
Huh. And therefore she's likely to fall in love with her obstetrician.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's perfect.
And I mean it's truly you know, if you're an obstetrician in a big group, and, you know, you just happen to be on call when somebody delivers and you deliver the baby, I suppose there's some attraction there. But if you know the woman, have delivered many of her children and are there through all the labors, I can tell you there's a special bond. I can and could feel it. And it's a feel-good hormone. And there has to be some reason for it. It's thought to help produce dopamine, which is another feel-good hormone, dopamine's a neurotransmitter hormone, but it's also a feel-good product. So there is oxytocin involved in the attraction, in the intimate relationship between a man and a woman.
So where is it? Why is it not present with our husband? Oh, I guess it is during pregnancy.
It is early in the relationship. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, when a couple meet in early in life, the forces of bringing them together, the attractive nature of the relationship has to do by nature to reproduction, even if they don't reproduce for a while. And then if the woman goes on like a birth control pill, certain things aren't there that are there with women that aren't.
Could you talk about that a little bit? Because I've seen women confused with that. And it might go down to a birth control pill. What happens with the birth control pill?
Well, with the birth control pill, suppresses the normal menstrual cycle. So the estrogen and progesterone levels don't go up and down in the normal menstrual cycle. And some women who have terrible cycles feel better on the pill. But others will notice, I don't I feel as much sexuality when I'm on the pill. I don't have libido like I used to. Vaginal dryness is there. The normal process isn't happening, and some women really pick it up. So
funny thing that also happens with Prozac, and some of
exactly.
the it's the same thing. So in other words, Prozac, a woman is depressed, she takes Prozac, it lifts her depression but reduces her oxytocin. So one might say that oxytocin could be the cause of depression, because with oxytocin you're looking to bond. And if you could
That's
reduce
right.
the oxytocin, maybe the frustration about bonding disappears, and that helps lift your depression.
Well, it does help a little bit, but it's interesting, as we were discussing, in the early years, there's much of an attraction that overwhelms some of the hormonal differences. Actually, a man's testosterone is thought to decrease as they get into a relationship, whereas a woman's increases. That's been studied in the past. So a couple meet early in life and they're together for several months. The man's testosterone or aggressiveness decreases somewhat, and a woman's increases, and her libido and stuff changes. And in the overwhelming nature of a young relationship, that may not be known. And they are chemically attracted, and minor differences or minor irritations that could even become more than minor are often overlooked or put aside until they're together many years, and then things begin to irritate each other. So at least in the early years, some of those chemical reactions and attractions are very strong. But then you get to midlife, there a lot of things change. And if they had a weak relationship, I think, then those chemical relationships become more pronounced.
Well, a weak relationship would be one that's like a fixed relationship. It's fixed. You're stuck in the role. I'm the man.
Yeah.
You're the woman. This is the way you behave. This is the way I behave. Yeah. You know, men don't know. One of the things that men don't know is that if a woman picks up her testosterone estrogen balance and becomes, even the word masculine is a wrong word because it's the wrong word, but she gets more of the male hormone balance and she may become stronger and less dependent. In many ways, it's a great relief for him. In many ways, he benefits by this, but he doesn't get a chance to see it because he's stuck in his roles.
Yes. It's certainly a very compelling way to look at some of these relationships. I like your thinking here. It's a very, very interesting thought process of what goes on between a man and a woman during this very difficult time.
The name of the book, by the way, for people to hear is The Perfect Menopause, 7 Steps to the Best Time of Your Life. And we're going to focus the second half of this show on you speaking directly to the women about what you have discovered. You know, but right now we're here at the first half because I promised a number of men who would be listening that I would try to help them with this today through you, because they see it, and they see this woman they love, and they see her suddenly go blank, and they say the question, can't you use your mind to overcome this condition you're in? Can't you take your mind and just straighten it out and say for a minute, you don't need a new house. You're not so unhappy. I'm not your enemy. Why can't you take your mind and overcome your hormonal dictates? And it's almost like it's a blank spot. It's like, why? Why can't the most evolved women who understand their hormonal changes not overcome them, and why can't the men who get stuck in their fixed position not give them the room to go through what they have to go through? It's almost like a battleground, almost like the battle is necessary, almost like the war has to be there. Do you know what I mean?
It's an intriguing concept you have. I think I think you're right. It depends certainly on the couple. but it's interesting, as I'm thinking this, and what you're saying is that when a woman comes in to me for a consultation, very frequently her partner will come. And it's interesting, and I hadn't thought about this before until you mentioned it today, both in our earlier discussion and now, that some of the men are rather dependent, as you say. They are sometimes passive, and the woman is more aggressive in terms of the issues. Just as they sit together in my office with me, just the three of us. Now, it certainly doesn't describe every couple, but as I think about it, more than I would have thought. Very interesting concept.
And it's almost if it's a test. It's almost as if, you know, if we get past this, we get to a new place. But if we don't get
past it,
we go numb. We go dead. We become like those people who are not related. We look at each other. We live together. We hang around. We watch television. I play golf, and I barely see you because I have now taken you as some kind of a piece of my life and put you in the corner where you take care of the kids and you call the grandparents and you make Thanksgiving dinner and I'll go off with the boys or the girls, which is what they generally do. But it's very hard to maintain a relationship. And I think your job and my job is to try to bring this into consciousness at a level where there is both compassion, understanding, and strength, where a person can really stick to their beliefs in one way or another, but bring consciousness to it.
I think one of the things, Armand, that both of us, it's both our jobs and others like us, to try to get both men and women, and in this case what we're talking about is the situation that you're bringing up, is to try to get women to use their inner strengths, their mind-body strengths and techniques to fulfill that thought that a man has of, can't you do something about this, by your inner power. And it's in our society, everybody's asking for a pill or a lotion rather than can't you do yoga or can't you do meditation or hypnosis, things that really you and I know can work to at least some extent if they'd only really invest in it. I think there are some women, I will have to say, and even professional women, medical people, that have such difficulties with their hormones that they're overwhelming. And sometimes just a touch of a hormone resolves the issue enough that then they can do that. So some of them, really, I think, no matter what mind-body technique they use, it's so bad that they need a little help before they employ a mind-body technique.
So sometimes you think getting the body in action is almost the first step, because, you know, men go through that as well, which we'll also talk about. We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back from our break, we'll have a station announcement, and then I will play a little music, and then we'll continue with Dr. Henry Hess. Henry, stand by. You'll be listening to the whole thing, but because he's on phone with us. Back with Dr. Henry Hess, author of The Perfect Menopause. Beautiful book. I'll be right back with you.
Oh,
That's Corey Smith, Hard-Headed Fool. What happened? How's that for a touching interim song there, Henry?
Very nice.
Very nice. All right, Henry, let's talk about what you've discovered. Dr. Henry Hess, MD, PhD, chemist, doing all this stuff. There's this big fight between the people who say you got to do the cytoestrogens and the phytoestrogens and the, you know, what have you found?
Well, in
what are the seven steps to the best time of your life?
Yeah, I've been doing this for almost 30 years, so I sort of think I know how to at least the secret to success. And I think, as Armand and I have been talking, the secret, I think, to success is just what both of us have been doing, is talking to our patients, because that's the most common thing. But I've looked at menopause over the years, and I think it's still the appropriate thing, is that it has to be individualized to an individual patient. And it's definitely a time of life where there's changes. And the changes can be, I think, handled in three broad categories that help describe therapies. One is natural therapies, which I, as a chemist and natural therapist, I really think a lot of people can do. And that
includes what?
Lifestyle changes and herbs and vitamins and things like that. The second is medical therapies, and there are medical things out there, drugs that people can use for various things. And as we were talking about the male, for example, things like erectile dysfunction drugs and similar things for women, for hot flashes and things. And then there are hormone therapies, and there's a whole array of hormone therapies that are useful depending on the situation. So I look at that in those three broad categories. And then, although there are some 43 major symptoms of menopause, and it's, I think, obvious to anybody that thinks the term menopause, that hot flashes and night sweats and stuff, but the thing that mostly come to us in our practice are women who've had trouble finding solutions to major issues like weight gain, sexual dysfunction, and sleep. And those are, I think, the three things that we see.
Let's talk about those three. What have you found? How about we take that in reverse order? Let's start with sleep, and why is that so important? And why does that happen?
Well, I think you probably could answer the first two with sleep, even.
I know that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Sleep is a major, major dysfunction in men and women, and it's a major dysfunction as we get older, and it hit in menopause. And we're not clear as to exactly what the etiology of increasing sleep dysfunction with menopause, whether it's aging alone or whether it's being woken up by a night sweat or all the things that are on our mind.
Maybe you feel life is shortening and you want to spend more time conscious. Maybe some demand in the body is saying, you know, you're getting older, because older people always seem to have trouble sleeping. You know, maybe as you get older, the body says, don't spend 8 hours sleeping. You don't have that many hours left. Spend less hours.
I agree with you. I don't like to sleep myself, but I can look at my own personal self and say all the years that I delivered babies and was up night after night after night made me not right. I mean, I think you gain weight that way, and we know that for a fact. We get more moody. And that could be part of a woman's problem with mood dysfunction, is that she just isn't sleeping well. And she isn't sleeping well because she's getting night sweats. You can explain it a number of different ways. But in the book, as that's one of the major steps to get better sleep, we look at the different ways of doing it. You know, the natural things such as feng shui or herbal therapies, and there's a lot of herbal therapies. We know that melatonin and light therapy is helpful. There are herbs such as valerian root and passion flower, etc. Or there are even medicines. There's a lot of different ways, and we have to sort of talk to women and see what they would be willing to do to try to improve, for example, their sleep. And if they don't sleep well, they're not going to be a good sexual partner. they're going to gain weight and not be attractive to their husbands. It's one of the keys, I think, to all of this.
Now, a lot of women, when they're up late at night, a lot of people up late at night usually watch television and fall asleep to the television.
Exactly.
The television has excitatory commercials, things that trigger the amygdala, send off all kinds of signals in your body while you're asleep, you know, making you not get that kind of deep sleep that you want.
And I'm 100% agreeable with you. That's exactly right.
I think there should be a shut-off switch on your TV that goes off at 2 a.m. no matter what. You know what I mean?
Well, it's also light, so it interferes with the melatonin production. So it's a silent thing. Even if you turned off the sound, it would irritate your long-term circadian rhythm.
So you're really against falling asleep to a TV. Even if you're alone and you don't know how to sleep, this is not the way to do it.
Right. But there's all kinds of meditative things, and I myself like to use self-hypnosis tapes to go to sleep with. I find it helps me in multiple ways, including getting to sleep. A woman typically in this age, the early menopause age, goes to sleep okay, although not everybody, but then she wakes up. That's the issue. She wakes up and then has a hard time getting to sleep after that. That's a typical problem that we work with. But
we learned from one of our researchers. One of our researchers said that we sleep in 90-minute cycles, and that when you wake up in between the 90-minute cycles, it's fine. He said, you know, you give yourself 5 or 10 minutes, go back and get another 90-minute cycle. You don't get damaged at all. But don't wake up and think you're up for good. You get up, you go eat. He suggests you have a piece of cheese or a piece of milk product or something like that that'll help you slide back into sleep. You know, what do you recommend if people wake up in the middle?
Exactly what you do. You're exactly right. One of the patients said to me recently, and I'm blanking on the actual solution we came up for her sleep. But we were talking about the solution, and so when we got done, and she was so happy that she was doing better, so I said, so you don't wake up in the middle of the night anymore? And she said, no, I wake up. She said, I wake up, I look at the clock and go, hey, it's only 3 a.m., I can go back to sleep. Yay, and she goes back to sleep. And the point is that we all wake up a lot, and I recognized from her comment, and since her comment, that I wake up a lot. I'll wake up and I have adopted her philosophy. Oh, look, it's only 3 a.m.
And our author suggests that you time an hour and a half from now. Make sure you don't set your alarm to break up your 1.5-hour cycle. He said, because if you wake up at 3 o'clock or if you wake up at 5, don't have your alarm go off at 6:15. He said, have it go off at 6:30 because he believes the 90-minute cycle is so essential.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of thinking on that and lots of issues regarding sleep and stuff, but it's important. I guess the key idea is that it's very important, which made us want to keep it as one of the seven steps to make a perfect menopause.
Problem with it is also that people tend, when a woman goes through menopause, they tend to sleep separately. The man says, I'm going to sleep in another room. She says, your snoring is keeping me awake. She wants to keep the windows open. And I think it's a real damage to the relationship when they sleep separately, because whatever bonding is available no longer takes place.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I agree with you.
Don't leave the bed. You know?
In my instance, my wife snores, and I put up with it.
Right.
I sort of chuckle about it, make fun of it, you know?
You have to get keys. You know, do you ever hear of Q-U-I-E-S?
Yeah.
Keys are wonderful little ear things that you put in that really help through that period. So let's talk about the other six steps.
Well, the next one of the other steps that's a biggie in our practice is weight management. And I think the key to weight management is for a woman to understand that there isn't going to be a pill or a magic potion. And a lot of things happen in menopause. Again, same with sleep. There's an aging phenomenon and a hormone phenomenon. And we talked already about how the estrogen-testosterone ratio changes at menopause, and that has to do with changing metabolism and it puts women into a little bit of a metabolic syndrome type of situation where weight gain is easier, and weight gain in a male type fashion around the waist and around in the neck and stuff like that. But it's really hard to get people. This is where the mind body thing that you and I really feel strongly about. It's very hard to get patients, and especially women, to really understand how difficult it is to lose weight and how aggressive they have to do to lose weight, especially at this age.
Well, then another thing happens, Henry, what I've seen with some people, is they become obsessed with body work. Like they've got to go to the gym, they've got to go swimming, they have to do the thing, they got to keep the fat off their bodies. But by doing that, aren't they reducing their source of estrogen? By reducing the fats off their bodies?
Well, you're right. You're exactly
so
right.
Isn't over-exercising also a mistake?
Uh-huh. No, you're right. The fatter a woman is, the more estrogen she'll have. And it's not that she produces more, it's just that her body will hold on to it in the fat stores. So from the estrogen point of view, there will be more estrogen there. It seems kind of contraindicated, but it actually helps protect the bones more if you're heavier. And it's not just from the protective padding of the weight. It's actually from the increased estrogen.
Hmm.
But it's not good for the cardiovascular system. So
there may be some, you would say that a perimenopausal or a postmenopausal woman with an extra 5 to 7 pounds is not something to be heavily concerned about.
No, that's
it's when that weight gets
thing.
Out of control.
Exactly. Yeah, if they're too thin, I mean, there's been a lot of studies. I mean, even studies that have shown that elderly that are too thin, if they get critically sick, won't be able to as well come through it in the hospital as somebody that's a little heavier. I mean, so you know, people that tend, male and female, that tend to get older and cachectic really aren't as good a shape as they should be.
Cachectic?
But you really wasted.
Mm-hmm. Yep, okay, so continue, please. Yeah.
So weight is a big issue for women at this point. And in terms of our earlier discussion, even in terms of self-image, that could be one of the other things. That there's a disconnect between the man and the woman over how she looks, the weight gain, and things like that.
And he, loving her as much as he does, doesn't want to mention it to her because she's so sensitive right now and she's having so much of a hard time. And so he doesn't want to mention it to her, so he finds excuses to stay away from her. And she welcomes these excuses because she's feeling disconnected from him. And it kind of just kind of withers into oblivion.
Yeah, I think it's a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, men tend to be overweight as well, that seems to be more accepted, doesn't it?
And very often, it's in response to their sexual frustration. You know, they kind of bury themselves.
But if you look at some of these TV sitcoms, it's interesting that the woman is usually thinner and attractive, and the man isn't so much.
The guy is chunky. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting because you sort of see that in life, really. Very interesting. So I think that's one of the major things. And then, of course, also what we've discussed, the other major thing is the sexual issue, which is a major, major issue. In our practice, the weight issue and the sexual issue at any age is a big issue. Women are dissatisfied with their intimate life and their sexual desire, it seems like, no matter what age. And I think that has a lot to do with what we discussed earlier, that in the early parts of a relationship, the hormones are changing in response to the relationship, but as they're together over time, then bigger issues come into play, and then some of the psychiatric things that our minds do start to really push aside those intense attractions, and there's problems. And as time goes along, they get to be more and more of a problem.
What's a woman to do as she feels herself disconnecting sexually from her mate?
Well, I think understanding that is the first thing, because they basically always think that their hormones are off and they need hormones. I mean, that's a universally their thought when they bring it up to me. Isn't there some pill or some hormone? And I had one time this patient, she was 52 or 3, and she's, I mean, still a patient, but I remember the conversation that she was talking to me about how she doesn't have any desire, and we were talking about the relationship issue and how she could do what she could herself to beef up the relationship and the issues. We talked maybe 15 or 20 minutes after her regular gynecologic exam, and we got all done, and she said to me all over again, isn't there a pill you could give me? And I said, I just did. I just gave you the pill. And she thought I was, you know, she didn't understand the interaction as I had meant it. And maybe I didn't do a good job of it. I don't know, but it was interesting. That
so what could
mind,
a man do with a woman who is feeling sexually disconnected? Do you think it's being more delicate, more foreplay, more boyish, and being a little boy trying to please mommy? Or should he take control and just say, come on, woman, I want you to be my woman? What do you think a man...
Or
a combination of the two?
I think this is a great conversation.
I think we need to write a book. I think you and I need to co-author a book.
I love it. We should do that.
I really mean it.
But I do, too. I think that it's very important and sort of, you know, it would be very... you'd have to first, I think, identify the perfect relationship, because I think what you and I are both saying is that in a certain sense, a woman presenting to me with trouble, and some of the trouble, sexual, of course, is that her husband really doesn't know how to adequately carry out foreplay. And I mean foreplay that begins in the morning, you know, as he's showering throughout the day, and the wife may not be attracting that foreplay. You know, it's because it just isn't physical foreplay as they crawl into bed. It's what builds up over the course of the day or the week. And there's some patients that I have that really know how to do this, that throughout their relationship, they as times change and things change and stresses in their life change, that they know how to do this with each other.
I have a feeling, though, that the men who can adequately do foreplay always did it. They always did it maybe in another form. Maybe there was always in the suggestive phone call or in the message or the whispering that they've always had the idea, you know, that you have to warm the oven. And it's like, so when suddenly it happens later in life when they're not used to this at all, it becomes so technique-oriented that you can't respond to it. I think that's a problem. Okay, the name of our book, The Man's Guide to the Perfect Menopause, right?
I like that.
That's the one that we're coming up with next. This book is The Perfect Menopause, 7 Steps to the Best Time of Your Life by Dr. Henry Hess, a thinking man. Henry, we've got about 2 more minutes. Give me 2 more steps that we could throw to people. About 4
well,
to women.
The other steps are to improve aging by managing dryness. Of course, both men and women, but since women go through a quick menopause and loss of estrogen, their whole body starts to dry out. And so a woman goes from being a grape to a prune or a raisin. There's lots of things in terms of dryness. There's lots of supplements and ways of keeping the body moist and humidifiers in the house and moisturizing creams and even hormones. Then, of course, there are the hot flashes, night sweats. That's another step, managing all cognitive dysfunction and all these things that we already talked about. So there are a couple of other steps like that that are very, very important. And the important thing is that they can be managed. There are options for management no matter what your situation, whether you've had breast cancer or have had some other medical problem or have hypertension. There's ways, natural and medical and hormonally, to manage this. There are options.
But the problem is that you run into opinionated doctors, and the doctors say take medicine, and the other ones say take these artificial, take these natural, take the vitamins. Everybody has one solution only.
I agree with you, Armand. Yeah.
And that's our problem.
One of the problems is that menopause really isn't taught much in medical school or residency, and nor are natural therapies. These things that you're right there. And the problem is getting worse, not better, unfortunately.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. I think we may have to do this again, but I'm serious about our book. I'm serious. I mean,
I wrote it down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll be in touch with you about it.
Okay. We'll talk. This is Dr. Henry Hess. The book he's got is 7 Steps to the Best Time of Your Life for Women. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Now, you know, what can I say to you? I can say to you that we are trying our best to learn as much as we can. I will be back with you soon, my friends. Wonderful people. Wonderful people. Send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. Tell me your reactions to what you were hearing today. Bye-bye for now.